Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It is a minute past the hour on this, the 8th day of December 2016. Yes, we are roaring right through the first full week of December. This is Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. Yes, indeed. And hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. They're waiting for you over in the Head On Radio Network .com chat room. All you have to do is go there, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in where you will be met by the likes of Anatole, Arthur, Laborman, Steve from Georgia, Stan, Stockton, Larry, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Yes, yes, the madcap merriment, the zany multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room will be yours. And of course, there is no price for admission. There never, ever is. Let's see. Yep. I got the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part. Right. So, that being the case, I'll move on to the part where I mention the fact that this is a listener-supported broadcast endeavor. We don't have any ads. We don't have any backing from any massively wealth-laden groups. We have the determination of a small handful of people who want to make sure that independent broadcasting remains alive. Mm-hmm. That includes our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Nancy and Carol, to Marcia and Sylvia, to Dwayne. Thank you all very much. You're the reason we don't have anything extra to raise this evening. Instead, we just need to raise the regular, usual, typical evening $200. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, and 64 at $3.13, leaving a rounding error of epic proportions. If we do it at the $3.13 level. But however we do it, just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, then fill out the fields. And remember, between now and the 15th, there is a subscription premium on the table. Joan in Taliban, Indiana, will happily double your first month's contribution if you become a subscriber to The Horn. Yes. So if you subscribe at $10 a month by clicking that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, then Joan will turn it into $20, okay? If you subscribe at $20, Joan will turn it into $40, all the way up to the 15th day of December. And what date is the 15th? Hold on. Yeah. That's what I thought. A week from tonight. All right. Thank you, Joan. Thank you very kindly. And hopefully a lot of people will take advantage of that kind and generous offer. But anyway, you slice it. You don't have to, when you get to that PayPal interface, you don't have to put in your, you know, what you do or where you do it. You can leave all that stuff blank and just get to the next page where you make your choice about PayPal or credit cards and what have you. Okay? If you prefer to contribute by the United States Postal Service, your gift can be sent via check or money order to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And let me know if you do it that way, and I can get hold of Boss Man Wayne and tell him he doesn't have to take his spider-proof gloves to the mailbox there and needs only take with him, say, an old garden implement in case he runs into the Klan, who also pick up their mail at that same location because, well, because UPS likes to have money from the Klan, too. They're equal opportunity, UPS. Okay. So that's pretty much all of the basic housekeeping. I was looking at the calendar just to try to get a notion of what the we really shouldn't miss any broadcasts as a result of Christmas. Christmas Day itself falls on the 25th, which is a Sunday. Christmas Eve is Saturday the 24th. New Year's Eve is the 31st, a Saturday, and Sunday is January 1st, New Year's Day. So that's kind of nice. It should be a pretty ordinary, normal, boring, everyday kind of calendar for the rest of the month. Yay. Thank you very kindly to Steve from Georgistan, Ms. Karen, and Cletus. We're off and running, and we've got only $189. $189 to go this evening in fundraising. And it's good to get out of the gate early on this kind of thing. Thank you very kindly once again. Checking in on a couple of pieces of mail. Terrace says, subject line, Article 5 in 2 years, talking about Article 5 of the Constitution. Dump will never be president because Americans are good people, except a good amount of them. 62.8 million aren't. Hilarity won by only 2.6 million votes. Who among us good employed white people of California would have predicted that? With a margin like that, who really cares whether she lost? We all lost. Some of us just don't know it yet. How long will the good white people stay stupid? As long as it takes until the tanks run through our neighborhoods. Angry asks, where are the white liberals? We're in California, hunkered down in a warehouse that's about to go up in flames. There are a lot of sensations like that. Kind of waiting for the whole country to do that. Ah, thank you for the update. In the far frozen north, Ron says 5x5 in getting whiter by the hour, Eastern Ontario. But that's a weather thing, not a culture thing. It's apparently snowing rather. It's getting kind of coldish here, too. We start the broadcast here in the fabulous Horn Studio at a toasty 57.9 degrees. Agnes made me knuckle under and finally burned some propane. I don't feel real good about that. But that's where we are. It's probably not good for the machines to get particularly cold either, is it? No. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. That's the day of the week that we reserve for things that kind of, make us do that that we find from over in right wingistan and points elsewhere. And we are not without exemplars, naturally. We are not without exemplars this evening. First of all, I went and checked my Facebook page earlier today, and someone has done lovely's not exactly the word you want. How about a shockingly accurate imagining of a naked Benito Cheeto sitting in some sort of gilded cushioned chair, looking back over his shoulder with a mock-up of the Time magazine cover, the title, however, reading "Pervert of the Year," and I don't think there's any doubt, based on his own words, that in fact Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a jet, is in fact a pervert. I don't think there's any doubt of it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw that, and the first thing that occurred to me was from a shockingly prescient film called Idiocracy. We refer to it quite frequently hereabouts, in which one of the characters, once Joe has gone forward into the future, I think we can ditch forward on that. Once Joe has gone into the future, he goes to his lawyer's house and pecks on the door, at which point his lawyer, whose name, by the way, is Frito, yells, because he has a chair that also doubles as a toilet, so he never has to leave the TV screen, the giant TV screen that's only a couple of feet in front of him. Frito yells, "Go away! I'm baiting!" Ah. And that was kind of the image that popped into my mind when I saw the Pervert of the Year Time magazine parody on my Facebook feed. There you go, Gerald. There you go, Gerald, pointing out, it's got electrolytes. Exactly. But then it only got worse, because later in the day, the name of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's choice for Secretary of Labor was announced. And that choice is Andy Puzder. Andy Puzder, in turn, is CEO of CKE Restaurants, which might not immediately call anything to mind until I tell you that CKE Restaurants is the overarching holding company that runs none other than Carl's Jr., which you might recall figures prominently in Idiocracy. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, it does. You might recall that in Idiocracy, Carl's Jr. One of the two primary corporate sponsors of the entire freaking government, right?
It turned out the results of Joe's IQ test had caught the attention of the highest levels of government.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm the smartest guy in the world? Says who? The IQ test you took in prison. You got the highest score in history. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Yeah, dumbass. You're even smarter than President Camacho. That's how come he's making you Secretary of Interior.
Okay, so who are you?
I'm the Secretary of Energy.
You won a contest, got to be a cabinet member. I'm the Secretary of State. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money. I'm so smart, why don't you know that? Secretary of Defense.
Huh?
And Funbags over there is the Attorney General.
And that's Secretary of Education.
It's kind of stupid, but it's President Camacho's stepbrother. Still does a pretty good job, man.
No, I think there's been some kind of mistake, because the test I took was real, real easy. I'm not...
You get the idea. Mm-hmm. So we've got another thing that, and you know, thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you. You are a good and kind goddess, and we will have to sacrifice another gross of rubber chickens to you at midnight tonight. Thank you, because henceforward, when the Trump misadministration begins doing everything in its power to fuck working people in this country, which they will do, we get to say, at every mention of Labor Secretary Andy Putzner, really, Putzner, that's his fucking name, we get to say, brought to you by Carl's Jr. And of course, there's that other part, the other portion of the film. You are a terrible mother. Come back when you have money. Your children are starving. Carl's Jr., fuck you. I'm eating. Mm-hmm. Extra big-ass fries! Asa pointing out, I think at this point we're pretty much guaranteed the Mad Max future. Sadly, I fear you're correct. And by the way, we have a request out to computer geniuses, and there are many of them in the Horn Family Community Congregation. It comes courtesy of Jen in Australia. Jen would like to have an app. Pretty please, if someone would care to design it and build it. Snork was admittedly one of the first people to come to mind on this. We need an app that will automatically blank out every picture of Benito Cheeto that tries to appear on your mobile computing device. Jen even has names ready for it. One, eraser dick. Two, ass face wipe. Three, cartouche chisel off. To obscure? Well, not for some. Four, POC block. Five, SOB block. Six, and this is my personal favorite, Don be gone. Seven, off with his head. Or some other alternative to be named by the Horn Family Community Congregation in conjunction and consultation with the builder of said app. I love the idea. I have a feeling the damn thing would go viral. There's a lot of people in Merca that would probably pay 99 cents for something like that just to never have to see anus faces visage on their device. Right? But be that as it may, I'm sure that the Senate will hustle Andy Putzner right through the confirmation process, because all he's ever done is try to make sure that folks that work at Carl's Jr. extra big ass, wait, extra big ass fries. All he's ever done is try to make sure that people that work at Carl's Jr. and, you know, other places in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, under God. Extra big ass fries! Don't make a livable wage. He ruthless, and, you know, millionaire, billionaire, something like that. Who's counting? But he can't stand the idea that a mom working at Carl's Jr. would make a pissant $15 an hour. Even though we know that the world over in civilization, people working at fast food joints actually make more than that. And oddly enough, the doors aren't closing. He has also boasted that if he could, he would replace every worker with a robot. And of course, if you watch Idiocracy, you know that you get your extra, extra big ass fries by going to a machine that you put money into, or actually that you scan your barcode into. Unscannable. Why you don't got no tattoo, right? We're going to have the entire dialogue of that movie memorized by January 20th, 2020. We may have it memorized by this time next year. Among other things, Andy Putzder also opposes the Affordable Care Act. He says it's bad for business. Yeah, it's really bad for business when the people who work for your shitty wages can't afford to go to the doctor when they're sick. Because, you see, in millionaire, billionaire, who's counting, whatever, CEO Andy Putzder's world, if one of his employees gets sick, they can just die. And then he'll find somebody else that wants to work for $8.75 an hour. And if they get sick, they can die too, because there's lots of people out there looking for $8.75 an hour jobs in which they can't get more than maybe 30 hours a week. And then, of course, there's the fact that Carl's Jr. TV ads are essentially exercises in softcore porn. I'm sure Andy Putzder also is a climate change denier. As far as the sexist ads, well, okay, not, okay, maybe they're not sexist. Maybe they're just objectifying ads. Because I tend to trust a burger joint more to give me a really good burger if they show me ads on television of women holding those burgers while wearing barely any clothing. Yeah? You know.
With bacon strips, bacon jam, and bacon crumbles. She's giving her some, she's giving me. It's a bacon lover's fantasy.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're thinking, but come on. It's called the Bacon Three-Way Burger. What'd you expect?
The Bacon Three-Way Burger with 100% black ink.
Because there's three white girls in white bikinis, licking bacon jam off each other's fingers and craning their necks upward to get bacon into their mouths. That's a mark of a good burger to me. Thinking that three beautiful women have been back in the kitchen, getting pretty close to having sex with each other, while making my food. Mm-hmm. And Andy Putster says,
I like our ads. I like beautiful women eating burgers in bikinis. I think it's very American. I used to hear brands take on the personality of the CEO, and I rarely thought that was true, but I think this one, in this case, it kind of did take on my personality.
That's an actual quote. Right. And here's what's interesting, though. There are these things called statistics, and there are these things called surveys, and when one does a survey while actually using valid statistical models, guess what you find out? You find out that the majority of Americans find Carl's Jr.'s ads to be offensive. And while we're at it, Carl's Jr., I guess east of the Mississippi, is known as Hardee's, whose advertising logo used to be Gilbert Giddyup. I kid you not. Well, we've had Hardee's around here. The one in Beckley failed and has been replaced by a barbecue joint. It's a chain barbecue joint, but the barbecue's okay. But you never saw any bikini-clad babes walking in there. And God knows they weren't working there. Now, here's the problem. The Department of Labor is charged with dealing with issues of sexism and gender discrimination in the workforce. I know, it's kind of funny, isn't it? Women are 47%, as of 2010, women are 47% of the total U.S. labor force. And with growth in that area, they will probably be 51% of the labor force somewhere between 2008 and 2018. And I'm pretty sure they don't all think of themselves as yearning to... Jesus Christ! I mean, that stupid ad shows a woman frying... She's wearing a white bikini... And it wouldn't matter if it was a black bikini or a red bikini or a green bikini or a yellow bikini or a itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy yellow polka-dot bikini. But she's wearing a bikini while frying bacon. As a guy, I can tell you that I have, from time to time, fried bacon without a shirt on. I know, there's a certain segment of the Horn Family Community Congregation that's going, ew, hot, and that's probably like... 0.0001%, and the other 99.9999999999% is going ew. But you know what happens when you fry bacon without a shirt or insufficiently clothed? Bacon grease gets hot, and bacon, by definition, has a little bit of water in it. And when the hot grease gets a little bit of water in it, it goes pop and sends out like a heat-seeking missile, a little dab of lava hot, hotter than the interior of the sun, bacon grease to land on your skin, at which point you, macho guy frying bacon without a shirt on, cease to be macho anymore as you squeak like a third grader. See, Gerald's there with me. He notes, even if you're a guy, it's a bad idea to fry anything, especially bacon, while shirtless. And does, in fact, Gerald confirms my suspicion. Carl's Jr. is known as Hardee's in the eastern part of the country. Same shitty company. different name. So, under Carl Putzder, really is his name. Under Carl Putzder, Andy Putzder. Under Andy Putzder, if a woman files a labor complaint, he can just sit up there in his office at the Department of Labor and say, "Well, why wasn't she wearing a bikini?" I mean, if you don't complain, I go to the head of marketing and say, "What's wrong with our ads? I like our ads. I like beautiful women eating burgers in bikinis. I think it's very American. I like money." I know. Oh, and there's something else that slipped past my attention that Jen just reminded me of. OMG, this cabinet is going to bring down the Republic. It's a clusterfuck. OMFG, OMFG, OMFG. What's the name of the ex-pro woman wrestler from Connecticut? Plugs has offered her a job? What happens when these two cross paths? Do we all buy shares in Jell-O? OMFG, 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 Bob. The entire cabinet is a nest of rats. What happens when the rats all start to eat each other? Which, by the way, rats do. OMG. Don't talk about rats and Carl's Jr. in the same program segment. We don't want people getting any ideas that Carl's Jr.'s hamburgers are made of rat or anything. We'd never want people to start an urban rumor that spreads across the nation that Carl's Jr. burgers have rat in them. Don't do that. Don't say that Carl's Jr.'s hamburgers have rat in them. Don't say that. Yeah, Jen says, I've only taken my hands off my cringing face over the past week long enough to type. Yes, there we go. Linda McMahon. Mm-hmm. Linda McMahon, wife of, is it Jim McMahon? Dave McMahon, Fred McMahon, Epaminondas McMahon. Not the former Bears quarterback. This is the WW some other letter wrestling jackass. WWE. You remember when the soon-to-be president of the United States, Vince, thank you, Scott in San Diego, Vince McMahon. I was pretty sure it wasn't Epaminondas McMahon. See, Battle of the Billionaires at WrestleMania between Vince McMahon and Donald Trump. Watch Donald Trump take down WWE's Vince McMahon back in 2007. They had a contract signing. At one point in time, he hit Vince McMahon over the head with a folding chair. Because that's presidential. Of course, the other day, Kellyanne Conway said in response to a question about one of the ignorant tweets that Anus Face had sent out, well, he's going to be the president, and he tweets, so that makes it presidential, bitches. Okay, she didn't say bitches, but she thought it. Vince McMahon's wife, Linda, is going to be head of the Small Business Administration. Whew. Wow. It's almost, and of course, over on the other side, the Trump pansies say things like, well, see, he's just punking y'all. He's just doing this to get a response out of y'all. Well, no, they're actually going to have confirmation hearings, these asshats. And you know what? You know what? Steve in New York, you're absolutely right. Under the subject line, there's ratting them thar Carl's Jr. burgers. Steve says, can you prove they don't have rat in them? Ha, see how that works? It's like asking the president-elect, sort of, who isn't yet until the Electoral College meets, because, you know, he didn't win the popular vote by 2.6 million or so. It's like just saying, can you prove that Benito Cheeto's face isn't actually a giant genetic mistake where an anus grew where a human's mouth would be? Huh? Yeah, Jennifer noting, of course I don't Twitter, but hashtag that's presidential bitches. But yeah, that's true. Robert up near somewhere near Morgantown points out that Linda McMahon has spent millions of dollars running unsuccessfully for office in Connecticut. And thus far, the voters in Connecticut have had the good sense not to let her have any access to, you know, power. But still, all we need is one more female appointee, and we've got the possibility for Saturday night female Jell-O wrestling featuring Elaine Chao, Linda McMahon, Betsy DeVos, and a fascist lady to be named later. It's going to be, like I said, lots and lots of opportunities coming in the next 4 years for political satire, assuming we don't get marched off to the camps. Marty, in answer to your question regarding the chain barbecue joint, the answer is yes, Dickies. Because it's spread all, but there's no real good barbecue in West Virginia. It's not like further south where every little town has a great barbecue joint over by the tracks or something, where you know it's going to be. No. There's a couple of things lacking in West Virginia. One of them is good local barbecue joints that, you know, have generations of good barbecuing behind them, and good fried fish joints. None of them neither. And Long John Silver's does not count. Oh, no. Well, that's true. Jen points out that the fourth for tag team female Jell-O wrestling could be filled by Melanoma. Or how about Ivanka? They could be their own tag team. Oh, this is getting more interesting by the moment. Note coming in from Clarence. Hey, Bob, I'm not much of a believer in divine intervention. Actually, I don't believe at all. But I have a curious hunch that America is being punished for its negative behavior. If you follow the bullshit analogy of Pat Robertson, the shitstorm that is raging right now is the result of America's past and present behavior. Yeah, and I understand, Clarence, but the problem is they think that this act of sublime stupidity is somehow going to be cleansing, that America is going to get better, when it pretty clearly ain't. Oh, by the way, the other day, Chuck Jones, not the guy who gave us the great Warner Brothers cartoons, different Chuck Jones. This Chuck Jones being the president of United Steelworkers Local 1999, representing workers at Carrier. Well, he was interviewed by the Washington Post, and he said that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini lied his ass off when he said that more than 1,100 jobs would be kept in Taliban, Indiana, when he had the news conference at Carrier's Indiana plant. And the thing is, Chuck Jones was right. Benito Chito did lie his ass off. Because about 730 union jobs will stay, fewer than 100 non-union jobs, 600 union workers will be laid off. And, by the way, Benito Chito also claimed 350 engineering jobs that weren't slated to go anywhere in the first place. Okay, but you know that. So then, the Orange Menace took his mobile device in his tiny little hands and using his tiny little... I think I figured out why he tweets so much. Now, me, if I set out to type something on Facebook or Twitter or even email on a phone, I'm going to make a whole lot of mistakes because I have really big male human-sized hands. But the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has little itty-bitty, teeny-tiny, child-sized hands with little tiny, child-sized thumbs that are just perfect for a telephone keyboard. And so he took it out and he said, Chuck Jones, who's president of United Steelworkers 1999, has done a terrible job representing workers. No wonder companies flee country. If United Steelworkers 1999 was any good, they would have kept those jobs in Indiana. Spend more time working, less time talking. Reduce dues! yeah, dipshit. Reduce this. But then this happened. The Trumpanzees, after Benito's tweets. The Trumpanzees went wild. The Washington Post reported, half an hour after Trump tweeted about Jones on Wednesday, the union leader's phone began to ring and kept ringing, he said. One voice asked, what kind of car do you drive? And another voice said, we're coming for ye. He wasn't sure how these people found his number. Later on, Chuck Jones said on MSNBC, nothing that says they're going to kill me, but, you know, you better keep your eye on your kids. We know what car you drive. Things along those lines. Hey, you know who does those kind of things? Ha! Fascists do those kind of things. Lovely family you got there. Be a pity if something happened to him. Because fascism. And Jones noted he thinks some of the workers are already feeling betrayed. You know, Because they were. Not by their union, but by Mike Pencil Neck Geek and the Orange Anus. Right. And by the way, Steve from Georgia Stan just pointed out a story to my attention from USA Today, written by Aaron Kelly. Headline, House votes to fund government through April, boost defense spending. Dateline Washington, just one day before the government runs out of money, the House voted Thursday to fund federal agencies through April, boost defense spending, and send aid to flood-ravaged states and to the lead-poisoned residents of Flint, Michigan. That was the House, though. All that went over to the Senate, and the Senate must now take action to avoid a government shutdown by Friday midnight. And then after that, well, guess what they do? They go on Christmas vacation, paid Christmas vacation, and they don't have to come back till 2017. The vote was 326 to 96 on the spending bill in the House. Yeah. The outgoing chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, outgoing in this case, not referring to the fact that he's a really likable guy because he's Hal Rogers and he's a dick. I mean, this is a guy who goes hammer and tongs at trying to make sure more people in his... Well, he's the congressman for the sickest single congressional district in the United States. And they're that sick in large part because, well, they've got a shit ton of mountaintop removal.
You dick!
I thought so, Mr. Spicoli. Oh, yeah. But he said this was the only path forward. But guess what? Over on the Senate side, Joe Collaborator Manchin says he'll hold up the bill on the Senate side if 20,000 retired miners don't get some welfare to replace the pensions that were stolen from them by Joe's good buddies, the coal executives. Right. 20,000 miners will lose their health care benefits. Not pensions, but health care benefits. They'll lose their health care benefits at the end of this month. But Joe wants to make sure that, you know, the rest of the country pays for their health care, even as he prepares to collaborate and go along with whatever plan comes down the pike to take health care away from, you know, not 20,000, but 20 million American citizens. Thanks, Joe. Thanks. No, really. Thanks so much. Because according to the folks over at Think Progress, about 36,000 people in this country will die every year, year after year, once Paul Ryan gets his way and Mitch McConnell gets his way, and they pass that one sentence bill that says the Affordable Care, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act be and is hereby repealed, nullified, and withdrawn as though it had never existed. Period. All in favor in the House? Ah! All in favor in the Senate? Ah! And it goes up to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's desk, and he signs it with his big orange crayon. And that signature is worth 36,000 lives per year. That's not people who lose their health care. That's people who die. 36,000 people next year. 36,000 people the year after that. Science calls them statistical excess deaths. People who aren't going to die of necessarily the disease they have, but the lack of ability to get treatment for it. 36,000, 36 and 36, 72, 72 and 36, 72. That's 108 and 36 is 144 in 4 years. 5 years becomes 180,000, 216,000 people dead in 6 years. Because, see, understand something. This is no longer a struggle between two opposing political philosophies. This is existential. This relates to the ability to simply exist. This really is life and death. But it's also statistics, and it could be that 36,000 people won't die every year. It might just only be 27,000 people who will die who otherwise would have lived, except for the fact that Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and Donald Trump live. I mean, it's all just, you know, some the needs of the few are outweighed by the needs of the many, or even sometimes the multitude. Reverse Spock logic. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the night. Mm-hmm. Sobering, isn't it? Carol Baker notes, and this is true, John Glenn just died today at the age of 95. He took the American dream with him. It died today, too. And did I see somewhere? I think I did. That Greg Lake had died. Aged 69. Well, died yesterday, actually, December the 7th. Yeah. 2016 has been what I think is going to be the beginning of a pretty rough stretch for rock and roll. On the other hand, one door closes and another opens. What do I mean by that? Well, did I hear right? That at the tender age of 73, Mick Jagger is again a father? I think I did. Brand new baby born. I think at the very least, you have to say that John Glenn, in the course of 95 years, wrung every drop of life out of his existence. And in between being the first man to orbit the Earth for the United States and being the oldest man to go into space for the United States at the age of 77... he was also a Republican senator from Ohio for 24 years. What I found interesting is in the obituaries, there's lots of mention of his heroism in going into space the first time and of his courage in going into space the second time. Very little talk about his actions as an Ohio Republican senator. So, make of that what you will. But he, as the poet said, lived life to the lees, or drank life to the lees. I was touched by the passing of Greg Lake, on the other hand. No, John Glenn was not a Democrat, Steve. He was a Republican. I'm pretty darn sure of that. Let's check that out, though, because I just got that from Scott, too. Lots of people are saying he wasn't a Republican. Yeah, okay. Wikipedia says he was Democratic too. I don't recall him being a Democrat. That just seems wrong. But oh well. Maybe he was. Maybe he was. I guess he was. But regardless, not a lot done there. God, I could have sworn he was a Republican. Angry points out, how many are questioning the space program this evening? John Glenn accepted science and his NASA work anyway. Now, I'll be darned. I wonder where I got the idea that he was a Republican. Sometimes the brain cells can get it wrong. Kim in New Jersey writing in, subject line, the 20,000 coal miners. I'm feeling sorry for those miners, Kim says, but just curious as to who those coal miners probably voted for. Not a lot to wonder about there, Kim. Yeah, okay, maybe it was the fact that that John Glenn was notoriously conservative that made me remember him as a Republican. Yep, everything said, yeah, he was a Democrat, confirmed. Thank you, Carol. Meanwhile, Randy in PA says, Senator John Glenn, Keating 5 much? Okay, at least I'm not the only one. Gerald said he wasn't a Republican. I thought he was. I did too. And yes, he was part of the Keating 5, as Randy and Bob pointed out. Steve says Voinovich was a Republican, the last of the sane ones. Okay. Yeah, and Scott confirming he was part of the Keating 5. Yeah, Marty says it was speculated that his run for the White House hurt the box office for The Right Stuff, and the movie hurt his run for the nomination, the Democratic nomination in 1984. I had completely forgotten about that. All I remember about the 1984 race is Walter Mondale. Interesting footnote. NASA psychologists had determined during Glenn's training that he was the astronaut best suited for public life. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy suggested to Glenn and his wife in December 1962 that he should run against incumbent United States Senator Stephen M. Young of Ohio in the 64 Democratic primary election. In 64, Glenn announced that he was resigning from the space program to run against Young, but withdrew when he hit his head on a bathtub. He sustained a concussion and injured his inner ear, and recovery left him unable to campaign. He remained close to the Kennedy family and was with Robert Kennedy when he was assassinated in 1968. He served as one of the pallbearers at his funeral. 95 years. He lived it all. Ah, that could be it. Jennifer says, you're thinking of Buzz Aldrin, climate change denier. ? Very possibly. Oh, as they say on page G92 of the New York Times, when they make a mistake on page one, we regret the error. All right, so we still have $189 to raise this evening to keep up with fundraising and bill paying. The Gulfstream 5 needs a tune-up, and, well, Agnes's masseur, well, he gets a little bit surly when we don't keep up with the fundraising goal. It being a Thursday and all, of course, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. Always look forward to that. And, of course, conversation. Conversation is the very beating heart of what we do here at the Horn. And you are welcome to participate, encouraged, in fact, to participate. And I hope you will. Now, how do you do that? Well, it's easy. There are three ways. Count them. Three. Not 1, 2, 5, but 1, 2, 3. Once the third number, never mind. The first is the stress line. Area code 304-663-4676. Area code 304-663-HORN. The other number, 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you want to reach the program that way and you've never done so before, just send me a note and send me a contact request, and in it, and it's all one word, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and just put Horn Family or Thorn in the Side Thursday or something like that. And that way I'll know that you're real and not some sort of spam artist. Ready? Ready. So, yeah, let's take a break. One, like I said, one of the reasons that the death of Greg Lake touched me was his is one of my favorite tunes this time of year. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and the distant choir. The peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell. The eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a cyanide. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. And I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn. And I saw him in through his disguise. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said that he snowed Christmas. They said that he peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be heaven on earth. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
It's Thursday, December 8, 2016.
It is hard to imagine a worse choice to have the EPA.
No need to imagine. Donald Trump picks climate science denier and fossil fuel industry tool to head the EPA.
They used a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it.
Weather Channel smacks back at right-wing climate denial propaganda. It's official. Sea ice at both poles falls to stunning record lows. Plus, another pipeline spill, this one in North Dakota, not far from the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Huh, go figure. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If you could eliminate one government entity, what would it be and why?
EPA.
EPA?
She took the best one.
Yeah.
Get rid of regulations.
Yeah, because a clean and safe environment is for losers. Losers. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of losers, the corporate mainstream media was telling us just a week or two ago that Donald Trump had reversed his position on climate change.
Mr. Trump is also reversing his campaign positions on climate change.
Yeah, not so much, CBS News. Donald Trump has nominated Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt as the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Pruitt is a climate science denier and ally of the fossil fuel industry who was revealed in a 2014 New York Times investigation to be secretly colluding with fossil fuel companies to attack clean air and water standards.
If by colluding you mean literally copying and pasting from energy industry lobbyists in letters that were sent to the White House and the EPA.
Pruitt is also the chief architect of a multi-state lawsuit to block Obama's landmark clean power plan emissions standards for power plants, a crucial mechanism for the U.S. to meet its international climate commitments and curb dangerous global warming. Here's Pruitt on March 3rd.
This clean power plan that the president is advancing through his EPA is all about an anti-fossil fuel strategy to shut down coal generation and fossil fuel generation and the generation of electricity.
So the guy who is suing to kill the clean power plan is now going to be in charge of administering the clean power plan.
That's right.
Nice.
It signals that Trump plans a full assault on both climate action and the pollution standards that protect public health. All those breathless reports about Trump softening his climate change denial was really just a bait and switch. And the corporate media fell for it. again.
And you warned us about it. Now let's see if Senate Democrats step up and block this appalling nominee from being confirmed.
Meanwhile, the National Snow and Ice Data Center has officially confirmed that sea ice at both poles has plummeted to record lows for the month of November, never before seen in the satellite era. An amount of sea ice the size of India has melted away. In Antarctica, new satellite photos show a growing crack in the Pine Island Glacier ice shelf that's 300 feet deep and 70 miles long. And Britain announced this week it is moving its Antarctic research station in another part of Antarctica to a safe place away from a different large crack that is growing on a different ice shelf.
And all in the hottest November ever recorded on planet Earth.
Meanwhile, in North Dakota, a new significant pipeline spill into a creek that feeds the Little Missouri River near the tiny town of Belfield in West North Dakota. That's about 200 miles from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline. No word yet on the size of this newest oil pipeline spill, but officials say crews are now on scene trying to contain it.
Wow.
The pipeline company has reported 10 spills in the last 6 years. North Dakota averages 4 significant pipeline spills a year that have cost more than $40 million in property damage since 1996.
But otherwise, Donald Trump has said he supports building that pipeline against the objections of the Standing Rock Sioux, whose water supply would be poisoned if this happened just 200 miles down the road.
In Montana, the long-lasting legacy of toxic waste from copper mining killed several thousand migrating snow geese this week. The geese died after landing in a snowstorm on the toxic water of an old open-pit copper mine. Workers tried but failed to scare away the massive flock before the acute toxicity killed them, leaving what one worker called 700 acres of dead white birds.
Man, you're nothing but good news today.
You're welcome. Finally, the Weather Channel is smacking Breitbart.com this week for spreading climate denial propaganda. Quote, note to Breitbart, Earth is not cooling, climate change is real, and please stop using our video to mislead Americans. Weather Channel meteorologist Kate Parker excoriated Breitbart.com for using her video to peddle false climate claims.
They use a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it to attempt to back their point. Now, what's worse is that the U.S. Committee on Space Science and Technology actually tweeted it out. Here's the thing. Science doesn't care about your opinion. Cherry-picking and twisting the facts will not change the future, nor the fact, note fact, not opinion, that the Earth is warming.
Actually, cherry-picking the facts has changed the future. Welcome to it. For much more on these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome to the new age. 13 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, 8th day of December 2016. On the horn, and let's run straightway over check in with, could it be, possibly, I believe, maybe it is Reverbo?
It is I. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good, Reverbo. How are you?
Well,
I know. I mean, I probably need to excise that from the conversation, don't I?
I don't know. I mean, your world is a, yeah, you said a haven for the good side, for the light, and which means that we're constantly trying to keep the dark side at bay. I don't know. We seem to be losing this battle recently. And then I heard this morning with Scott Pruitt being, he's going to be up for nomination for, what was it, the EPA?
EPA, yes.
EPA, yeah. I mean, none of these people really appear particularly qualified. We've got to have a government run by generals and billionaires.
And hucksters. Yeah. Scott Pruitt, but really, what does the wife of a wrestling magnate know about the Small Business Administration? Is it okay if I ask that question?
None of them may not know anything, except I'm afraid that their job duties include reducing their department to something that they can drown in a bathtub.
I'm afraid that's probably the key job qualification. I mean, what does the religious maniac wife of a family whose wealth is built on Amway know about education?
What is Dr. Ben, I'm a crazy man, Carson? What the hell does he know? In fact, he didn't even want any kind of a job. And I guess he finally decided to take
HUD.
What is he going to be up for?
HUD.
HUD, that's right. A man who is quoted as saying that poverty is a choice.
Right, so, but see, he grew up in the inner city, and that makes him urban, which means that he's qualified. And he lived in a house.
Did.
So we've got the housing, and we've got the urban. And so now all he needs to do is develop that. Me, I'm just, I forget who said it first, but I'm still waiting for David Duke to be named as the head of the EEOC.
Well, that's what I was thinking. This is almost, in a perverse way, this is fun to watch. Who's going to be next? That's a good one. You know, how about the CEO of Exxon to the Department of the Interior or something like that? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, of course, he doesn't want that job. He's got a much better job.
Meanwhile,
Carol already runs the Department of Interior.
Yeah, he sort of does, doesn't he? Yeah.
I have a.
I was going to point out real quick. Carol Baker just pointed out Ben Carson. Well, he's the star of Uncle Tom's Cabinet, and so we got to do one of these.
Yeah. I forgot to bring up my bell to the kitchen counter. That's where I'm talking from. Right, giving her a ding for that, for sure.
We value the dings. Don't let that happen again.
I may just run down and get it while I talk to you. Can I multitask like that? Is the question.
But, yeah, I'll bet you can. Well, I mean, anybody who can pilot a dirigible, I think, can go and get the bell and get back to the kitchen counter.
While I'm doing that, so I have a friend, a really good friend. Matter of fact, I met him in the fourth grade. We're still friends, and he lives near me. And he kind of bought into the false equivalency theme. Oh, see, if I go in here to try to get my bell, you're on in here really loud, coming over the speaker. So,
oh, it may be a problem. Okay, we'll just
there you go. You're gone. You're gone, but you're still here. I was talking to him about these, Trump's posse, Trump's team, is just being a bunch of wild ass. You know, talk about the party. No, this is ridiculous. And of course, my friend says, the Democrats, they do the same thing. You know, he's always saying that the other side does the same thing. Now, admittedly, you're going to stack, if you're the winner, you're going to stack the cabinet, you're going to stack the government with, with folks that think like you. I mean, that's just expected. And you guys are going to get the good seats up front, and the losers are going to get the crappy seats in the back. It's just the way it works, right?
Or stand out in the cold. Except for Obama, because he wanted a team of rivals. So we got, Republicans at FBI, a Republican at defense. You remember?
Yeah, I don't. That's now I'm getting depressed. I was hoping to get through this without mentioning the FBI director.
Sorry,
but if you do this, this is what you expect to do. And maybe even 50 years ago or more, you had moderate people who you might appoint just because they were smart, and it wouldn't really matter. The partisan stuff wouldn't matter. Oh, this stuff's over now. We got a new thing going on, and the other side is going to naturally complain, and they're going to stand up and beat their chests about how you're stacking the government with either crazy liberals or crazy conservatives and da 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 da. And he's saying to me, "Well, you see what he's saying. You see, well, let's both sides do this." And
Well, okay. I mean, but let's work through that for a minute, Reverbo. Both sides do choose people who are ideologically in line with their political philosophy of governing. Not a problem. I mean, Ronald Reagan gave us James Watt. Remember James Watt?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Oh, yeah.
And Bill Clinton gave us Janet Reno.
Janet Reno, there you go.
Okay.
Janet Reno, but rest in peace, I believe.
By the way, yes, absolutely. But when's the last time that a president of the United States appointed a hamburger executive? Democrat or Republican? I'll give you time. I can play the Jeopardy theme if you need, Reverbo.
Well, I can answer that quickly. I say never.
That would be never. Yes, never is correct. When's the last time that a presidential that a president-elect appointed an Amway executive?
Let's see. Did Richard Nixon?
No. We're still at never.
Okay, never.
When's the last time that a president-elect appointed the spouse of a wrestling executive?
Oh, that's easy. Never.
You're 3 for 3. You want to go for the bonus round?
I did. I hit the bell because I went down and fetched it.
Yeah, you hit the bell.
Yes. I'll go for the bonus round. You bet.
So when's the last time that a president-elect appointed a former general who spread child sex ring conspiracy theories?
Well,
I know this is a tough one. This is a tough one.
That was the category, so I'll take never for 200.
Right, you are.
I'll say never.
Yeah, right, you are. This is,
you know, and there's another thing about this too. You know, I'm a big picture kind of guy. You know that. I like to write the intro and the last chapter. I leave the middle of the book to somebody else, to my staff. Okay.
Yes.
And there's the great thing about this. There's an irony here, and we do love irony. How is it? You know, so. Either the losing side invariably spends a lot of time complaining about stuff like this. But how do you manage to paint someone with the evil brush for wanting to do positive things for the country? How do you paint somebody? How do you trash somebody for wanting to, I don't know, save trees instead of cut them down? Maybe keep water and air clean instead of poisoning it. How do you manage to convince people that folks who want to do stuff like that, or perhaps even, you know, protect the middle class?
Well, you mentioned Scott Pruitt. It was not too long back that in celebration of the appointment of Scott Pruitt, a couple of groups called the Texas Public Policy Foundation and the Heritage Foundation got together in Washington, D.C. and hosted a little soiree, which they called the Premier Energy and Climate Policy Event in Merca.
Wow.
And they invited Senator Jimmy Snowball Inhofe, who said, "We're winning this thing very clearly. The American people are smarter than the people on the floor trying to keep this thing going," he said about climate change. And then he said, he told a story that's an absolute lie about his granddaughter asking him why he doesn't believe in climate change. And then he said, "Scott Pruitt and I are going to do something to try to save our next generation. You know, because if we try to give the next generation breathable air and drinkable water, it'll kill them. So we're going to save that next generation by fracking them to happiness and prosperity."
Do you see the irony there?
Oh, I'm swimming in it.
Now, you have to be pretty well chumped, do you not, to swallow swill like this, don't you?
Well, yes, but the fact of the matter is, after, I think, two or three terms in the Oklahoma legislature, the well-chumped people of Oklahoma elected Scott Pruitt to be their attorney general. And here's one of those really fun facts for Verbo. He has spent a lot of time, Scott Pruitt has, fighting something called the Mercury Rule. Now, given the fact that John Glenn rode into space on a Mercury rocket,
indeed,
maybe this was a rule to stop the production of... No, we replaced the Mercury rocket with the Saturn V now, didn't we? So it wasn't... No, the Mercury Rule is a rule that tries to limit the amount of toxic heavy metals that are released from coal-fired power plants, and which is in turn then ultimately consumed by Jim Inhofe's granddaughter, whose generation he and Scott Pruitt are going to try to save. At this point in time, my brain is getting real squishy trying to process all this evil.
Jesus. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. This does get better and better as every day that goes by. This gets better. Why doesn't this work on me? Why is my neighbor such a chump and I'm not? I don't understand what the deal is with human beings.
Can I ask what may seem to some an obvious question and others not so much?
I'm feeling really obvious at this point, so yeah, go ahead.
Have you ever been up like early on a Sunday morning there?
Sure.
Have you ever seen at, say, about 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, your neighbor's car pull out of the driveway and he doesn't come back for about 4 hours?
Oh, I'll bet I know where he went.
He went where they tell him that Mercury is good for you because God put it on planet Earth for us to take dominion over. I mean, that's at least a workable hypothesis, Reverbo.
I don't want to just ask rhetorical questions. I don't want to be so fucking obvious. Of course we know how you get them well-chumped, and of course we know how deliberate it is and how successful it is. Because the fact is, it doesn't really take, once you're chumped, the dark side, they have an easy time of it. You know, the Bernie Sanders side, you know, if you want to do things that are positive and you want to do things that are beneficial to your country and the planet, all of this stuff requires too much knowledge. It requires too much thought. It's really hard to do.
And they don't want to think.
No, they don't want to think. And what people
they don't mind thinking. They like to think about who they like better on America's Got Talent. And they like to think about whether they'd take that next spin on Wheel of Fortune or just take the money. Right? But thinking about the fact that the way they live and how they live is really, really in trouble, that they don't like to do so much, Reverbo. Because you can kind of see why, because you do think about it, right?
I think about it, right.
And I think about it, and Agnes thinks about it, and we have grandchildren who are 9, 8, and 6. And they don't think about it because we're trying not to fill them with existential dread too early. But because we think about it, Reverbo, we've got a pretty good idea of what kind of world they're going to be living in. Especially being as how they're living in West Virginia. Especially being as how these three precious little children live triangulated by three separate fracking operations. So not only is their water threatened, the air they breathe is poisonous too. And even for grown-up Opa and Ging Ging, when we think about this, we kind of, grab each other in a terrified embrace like we're waiting for a bomb to go off. Because, see, that's the thing, Reverbo. We are waiting for a bomb to go off. And the goddamn clock on it is ticking. And it's not like a Star Trek episode or Galaxy Quest or anything where when it goes down to zero, it's just going to stop at zero and nothing's going to happen. Because that's how it always happens in all the episodes.
Nobody's going to show up in a real nice three-piece suit and clip the right wire?
No! And
how
that...
do you sell this? How do you sell this? We know how they were able to sell it, but it took a while. And I was going to say before, what pisses you off so much? Now, yes, it's true that the every month, every year that goes by, I'm buying into more of the equivalency business. Yeah, both parties are mobbed up with Wall Street. Yeah, but I don't see anything coming from anywhere. And let's not kid ourselves. The Republican Party was and is about to implode. That hasn't changed. The problem was that the Democrats for the last 35 years, they just fiddled while the Republicans burned.
We touched on this a little bit last night because for the last generation, I think it was Scott and I talking out in San Diego. The first time I remember hearing Rush Limbaugh was 1989 on a little AM station in Charleston, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. By 1989, he had already metastasized into markets like Charleston. Meanwhile, our side sat back and said, well, what a Philistine he is. We certainly wouldn't want to make sure that there are other broadcasters out there who can counter this hogwash. No, absolutely not. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go and pay $10,000 to have our picture taken with Walter Mondale. Or have our picture taken with Bill Clinton. And that's part of how you do this, because an entire generation went by and none of this drivel was countered, Reverbo.
Well, did they forget how to do it? Why didn't they take it? I mean, the other side, you know, it's a little Joseph Devil's playbook, and then you follow through with the plans, all the secret plans you made since post-Vietnam about, you know, taking over the institutions from underneath. You know, this is all happening in the background. Don't pull back the curtain. Don't look behind the curtain. And the next thing you know, we got Donald Trump. Well, Christ, LBJ could have shown you how to do this. I mean, FDR could have shown you how to do it. But it takes people with some smarts. And the funny thing was, do you agree that Sanders and Trump pretty much identified the correct problems? They just, one of them took the low road and the other one took the high road to describe the causes to everybody.
Well, yeah, and I'll add my own little spice to this stew. When Bernie Sanders talked about income inequality, here's the problem. When Bernie Sanders talked about income inequality, he talked about it in terms of income inequality among Black folks, among Hispanic folks, among women, among gays, among the young, among, yeah, white people. Trump, however, talked about income inequality first, last, and always among white people. Screw the young, screw the Black. Screw the Mexicans, because they're all rapists anyway, and we're going to deport 11.5 million of them after we get them into the concentration camps. There's the difference. Bernie was the rising tide that lifts all boats. Trump was the rising tide that lifts the white boats.
Yes.
And if you look at it in those terms, that's how I keep coming back around to the essential racism that rides behind this phenomenon, and that a lot of the folks who pearl clutch and talk with their teeth clenched absolutely refuse to credit I don't know if you listen to a lot of public radio over there where you are, but I had occasion to be driving back from Charleston today, and I caught fresh air in which they played a pre-recorded interview between Terry Gross, who was out today with a cold, and a guy named, I think, Baki, who is the executive editor of the New York Times. And were it not for the fact that I needed to not be head-on by coal trucks, which incidentally are still running, the coal industry is not gone here, no matter what anybody tells you, I would have been pounding on the steering wheel, Reverbo, because he was talking about how, yes, we underestimated the economic anxiety in this country. But I think Trump did too. I think Trump is surprised. And so they're still playing the economic anxiety game. And there's something about this economic anxiety game that makes me think that convinces me that it is on the Republican side merely a whitewash, and I do mean white, for good old-fashioned garden variety sheet-wearing racism. Because nothing else explains it. You know, it's that whole Sherlock Holmes thing. Once you've eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is the answer. And along the way, the executive editor of the New York Times babbled on a little bit about how the New York Times was handling the alt-right, and said, no, we're not going to stop using, and then he used the word white nationalist instead of using white supremacist. And at that point in time, I knew that I feel pretty significantly certain in this. The New York Times is going to be useless for the next 4 years because they're mainly in the business of normalizing this stuff now.
Mm-hmm. Adapting to the absurd.
Well, yeah, and if you stop and think about things that have been ordinary in the past, Reverbo, things like press conferences. How do you? They're presuming that they're just going to go in and everything's going to be like it always was, and it's the American government, and yes, there'll be press conferences and people will be called on. What happens when he sends out a tweet and some reporter dies? Is the New York Times going to normalize that too? Because we're there. There are threats being leveled against a union local president, not the president of the international, but a union local president out in Indiana.
That guy in Indiana, yeah.
Nice looking family you got there. It'd be a pity if something happened to him.
El Duce, wherever he is resting, must be smiling at the news of these events in here. I mean,
And meanwhile, talking about people who are smiling or not, poor old Nikita Khrushchev is spinning in his grave because, yeah, he stood there and pounded on the podium at the UN and said, "We will bury you." But I think he had it in his head that, you know, global communism really would finally win the day. Well, no, Nikita, because Nikita was a World War II war hero, right?
He was. Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
And he was thinking that his economic philosophy was going to carry the day, but instead, no, he's spinning in whatever it is they did with his body because it's the people he fought against who are triumphing now. Because this really is a triumph of fascism.
Well, it is. It really is. And it's so easily implemented again with the you just a good dose of stupid, and I guess you got out. Did P.T. Barnum, is he really credited with this, or is it H.L. Mencken who said you won't go broke underestimating the?
I think that's Mencken,
the American public.
That's Mencken.
I think it's Mencken.
It's P.T. Barnum is apocryphally credited with having said there's a sucker born every minute.
Ah, yes, yes, who I, there's not a whole lot of difference between any of these people in those fields, but I digress. I guess that is where we're at. And so some people think this is a, you know, this is a, the culmination of stuff that happened after, you know, Al Gore got jobbed in Florida. But I think, in a way, this is kind of a culmination of the modern world after World War II, in a way. I mean, I think this is where we were headed as soon as that was over, and as soon as a middle class of consumers was created, and as soon as we started, that we couldn't buy, they couldn't build enough refrigerators and houses and cars fast enough for us to buy them. Well, that's kind of the country we got. We got a country of bankers and a country of consumers. Both of those things are the biggest part of our national economy. It's. I mean, do you think arguably you could? I mean, that's kind of that was the plan, right? Consume. To have is to be.
Well, it absolutely was, because that was how you maintained the economic growth that the Second World War created, and that was the way you moved forward, and that was the way you continued to create a middle class, and you consume, die, lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, a planned obsolescence. So there's
eventually, the same people who opposed Roosevelt were bound to get back into power. And what drove them crazier than anything else was the creation of that middle class. They loved the wealth that they were getting, but they didn't like the idea that the middle class had a little bit of it. And so those two dynamics working against each other get us to here. And still without the helium-filled pants.
Yeah, we're still waiting for those. I, you know, everybody was doing well in the 50s and 60s, though.
Every white body.
Okay, fair enough. I could have said that, but I was off running with a broad brush here. And had this ultra-high tax, or high taxes on wealthy people. And you had a really strong labor component in the political life. And everybody still was getting, and the corporations were still doing fine. I'm not sure I see.
Well, exactly, because even with those high marginal tax rates, it's not like the Bushes and the Kennedys were out there on the sidewalk selling pencils and apples.
Hardly. They couldn't make enough in Palace. They couldn't make enough dishwashers. I don't know, if you reduce the size of the consumer base, well, maybe what they figured out how to do, and I want to get, before we hang up, there's three documentaries that everyone has to see. Dr. Strangelove, Idiocracy, and Inside Job. Only one of those movies is actually a true documentary, but I'm telling you, all three of them are. And if you really want to see how this shit, what exactly goes on, you got to watch Inside Job. Have you seen that?
I don't think so. No.
So I cannot recommend it highly enough. It just describes it. It starts in the 30s and takes you through 2008, and it's just amazing. And the guy gets interviews with the movers and shakers of all these meltdowns and all this stuff. And there really is no tone of regret really in any of their voices. Not a one. And they all got to keep their big bonuses, and we all got to bail them out. Anyway, it's a superb, superb movie. Now, of course, I forgot what I was talking about, where I was going to go with this, but what were we talking about? Were we talking about Alan Greenspan?
We were talking about how the rich seemed to somehow always keep making money, and made it even when they were getting taxed for it, so we could have a country.
Oh, I remember what I was thinking of. Maybe the genius of the devils was to figure out how to amass even more incredible amounts of wealth without us buying anything. Without manufacturing anything, and that was that was in the form, for example, of the 2008 crash. You simply make deals. You don't have to make anything anymore.
No, you just shuffle paper.
Get rid of the middle class. You can get rid of the labor as a political force. You can, because you figured out how to just pyramid scheme everything.
It's a beautiful piece of work, really, when you think about it. I mean, they've really got this all sorted out, don't they?
Oh, they did, and our side did fiddle while this was all happening. It's just atrocious.
I'm not without sympathy to the people. Over here on the so-called left, you know, what left? Who say, well, you know, the Dems and the Republicans are pretty much the same thing. And, you know, Ralph Nader back in 2000 saying, you know, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. In 1968, George Wallace saying, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I just love the fact that Ralph Nader repeated George Wallace. That's one of those moments that the goddess of irony just puts
that's
out there
good.
For as a blessing for people who are paying attention. But you know there are similarities because this is an empire. All right, that has to be the departure for any discussion. This is an empire. Empires behave in a certain way, and what you get in an empire is shades of difference. You get nuance. But all of a sudden, what had previously been nuance is going to be a pretty big, stark gulf. Because when those sumbitches in the Republican majorities in both houses, when they pass that one-sentence bill, it's going to be hell on wheels. And maybe you can help with this, because I keep pushing this question. Will anything happen when millions of Trumpanzees look up and go, what in the hell happened to my health care, Eustace? I thought he's going to make America great again. And then the Republicans will explain to them that America can only be great again if 36,000 Americans die needlessly every year. And, you know, for Cletus, as long as he's not one of the 36,000, well, I reckon that's all right as long as America's going to be great again.
Well,
I mean, isn't that about the size of it? You don't think that the Trumpanzees are going to get out in the streets, do you?
They never have. This won't be the first time that they discovered that invitation to that party wasn't in the mail. I mean, it's never in the mail. And they're good for their vote, and that's it.
Well, that's the thing. It's always in the mail. It's just never delivered.
It's never delivered, yes. I know I thought Alan Greenspan, because it may have been an inside job, or it may have been just something I'd heard. Greenspan famously, I believe this is attributed, this is a true story, he either wrote or said, when referring to the economic system, whatever people call that, the neoliberal, I get my neoliberals and neoconservatives mixed up. I think neoliberal refers to economics, neoconservative refers to politics, but nevertheless, when he was describing what he was doing, what he was getting paid to do, he said that the most important thing was creating a level of insecurity among the working class in order for this all to work. Make sure you take away their security.
Oh, that's key to it.
He just comes out and says, they just say this.
Mm-hmm.
They just come out and say this. These folks don't hide what they're doing. Well, sure. I mean, what do you expect from people who don't have time or information to counter any of this that's going on? You know, they'll believe. You know, let me think how this works. Do you believe it's some Mexicans' fault that things suck here, or do you think it's maybe something a little deeper than that?
And I think you and I hit the buzzer at the same time. And what is a little deeper than that, Alex? But if you're white America, and you have been and you have been tuned with a racism pitchfork from birth in your little white towns and your little white houses, then if Trump says that the reason the plant closed down and went to Burkina Faso, which no plant has done, is because Mexicans, well, that's easy. So you what did Mary Poppins sing, Reverbo? A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Mm-hmm. Set them up and knock them down. But no matter how much you set me up, you will not knock me down with that. I'm just smarter than that. Shit, anybody can go, well, never mind. Here I go again being ridiculously obvious. The whole thing, it's almost impossible to remain smart. It's almost impossible for most people. They don't have the time to find the truth. They used to. You used to be able to find that the Hundley-Brinkley report used to tell you the truth. But, of course, that might as well be prehistoric history at this point. But I'll tell you what. I was thinking of this, too. If I was going to start a country, you always hear people say around here that all the real important changes, civil changes, all, were from the bottom up in the United States, like the suffrage movement or civil rights or,
yeah,
or, end the war or any of this, all the big things, big labor things all came up from the bottom. In my country, I think I want them to come down from the top. I don't trust the people on the bottom. I don't think that they do know what often is what's necessarily enough. They don't have enough information to, say, elect the most qualified person. They don't have the information or the time to study economics. I don't know where maybe somebody's going to say, Reverbo, you're nuts.
Well, I
want it from the top down, goddammit. I want the people, and so you're going to think you're talking electoral college talk here, kind of. And it kind of is what they were thinking.
Well, if Mencken is the one who said that quote you mentioned earlier about never going broke, underestimating the intelligence of the American people, if that's true, then he was echoing the thinking of Alexander Hamilton, because the Electoral College was Alexander Hamilton's baby, because Alexander Hamilton was a royalist who really didn't want any kind of significant power in the hands of the people. He figured they gave him the House of Representatives, and that was damned well enough, and probably enough to be trouble. But no, you don't get to elect the Senate, and no, by God, you don't get to elect the president. You'll elect electors who will then do the right thing. But see, the whole constitutional framework, and Dr. Bill would be handy here, the whole constitutional framework was put together by Enlightenment thinkers of tremendous privilege and wealth. They wrote themselves a constitution that above all protected their wealth. But they also predicated a whole lot of the constitution on the fact that people who got into government would always act, Reverbo, in good faith. And that horse is gone out of a barn that burnt a long time ago. Now, when you say you want top down because you don't trust the people at the bottom, as a statement of broad general principle, I'm inclined to agree with you.
This is my hypothetical planet I'm talking about.
I think that applies in the United States broadly. The Republican base cannot be trusted with anything like civil rights or a woman's right to choose or workplace safety or food safety or fairness or clean water or clean air.
Evidently not.
But neither can the Republican top. So,
Now,
on the other hand, I think, if you will permit me this little bit of analysis,
sure.
I think the base, in terms of Democrats, and I will even include, I'll go broader than Democrats, I'll say progressives, they know. I think they really do. I think they can be trusted. The Democratic primary showed us, even though I understand that a lot of the stuff that the Bernie or Bust crowd was howling about was actually weaponized information. For instance, months and months of screaming about the emails and the DNC. Well, the DNC emails were, from May, after it was already past Bernie winning, after he had already become something a little about a mile on beyond a long shot. Okay. But that doesn't change the fact that the Democratic Party leadership had decided that Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee come hell or high water. But the income inequality issue became an issue because Bernie identified it as an issue. And people really did flock to that idea. Particularly the fight for 15. Because the fight for 15 isn't the white fight for 15. It's the fight for 15 for everybody. And if there were failings, and, I think there's probably already been some degree of a post-mortem on Bernie's own campaign, and he knows he didn't get into the game. He knows he got into the game too late. He didn't have a chance to go and really make his case to the people who were already solidly committed to Hillary, because, she deserved it and it was her turn and we're going to have the first woman president and all of that.
Oh God, I don't even want to hear shit like that anymore. What did we owe Hillary Clinton?
Not a goddamn thing. Uh-huh. But that's the problem. The top down people thought we did.
Well, you're making an obvious distinction here between the real top down, bottom up world that we live in and my make believe top down world where I'm just asking for a benevolent dictator. I just want, I instead of constantly, trying to claw your way up to the top and see if you can't get a meeting with some of these corrupt a-holes, wouldn't it be nice to, have really qualified, intelligent people making decisions, because we just don't have the time. Most people are just too goddamn busy. Just getting from one day to the next.
That is an absolute truth, and it's beyond argument, and it can be said of both sides, and it can also be said to be a deliberate act. Going back to that Milton Friedman, don't ever let the rubes get comfortable.
Well, right. Well, they never wanted the 50s and 60s repeated again. That's for sure. We don't want any more women's lib or gay lib. We don't ever want people with any leisure time. We don't ever want people who are going to want access to their government, access to their.
We don't want any of that if those people are going to participate in it, too.
Well, that never, that's all Southern strategy stuff. None of that stuff ever died. That's just, it's just every now and then it just slides into its little vampire coffin to be awakened, at any moment by people who need it. And it is. It's super powerful. And look what happens. Christ, I've read that the Canadians have a horribly racist attitude against the Eskimos up there. That there's, everywhere you look, there's racism, there's its ugly head everywhere. You just gotta, And the thing is, it really was Bernie identified it as a class problem, right? As I think, and not a racial problem. I don't know.
But the thing but one thing, understand this. It's easier for people to contemplate and get their heads around issues of race than issues of class. Because if I may use as an analogy, you remember To Kill a Mockingbird, which, of course, has a lot of problems if you do a critical textual analysis, but that's beside the point. Painting Broadway.
I mean, I remember it. I remember generally, yes, the book.
There's a passage in there where it is explained that the jury, despite all the evidence, convicted Tom Robinson because he had the temerity to feel sorry for a white woman. Okay? And that's at work here. There are some things that are intolerable. If we're going to have income inequality that is class based, then it's possible there might be people of color out there, and there already are. But it might become obvious that there were people of color out there who were doing better, and feeling sorry for their less fortunate white fellow Americans. And that's the kind of thing that drives a certain ignorant part of this country absolutely mad. It's intolerable.
Well, they're doing a fine job with institutionally there. They seem to be rounding up the people that they don't like, and they seem to be doing a pretty good job of eliminating them. Anyway, I don't know with this Trump thing. Sometimes I think that in 4 years that this is just going to be kind of a four year disaster, and you know that there's going to be something new 4 years from now. Just the way, I mean, it's true that Obama was kind of a novelty. Don't take that the wrong way. And he showed up at the right time, and he was the right guy at the time. Again, I don't know what we owe Hillary Clinton, nothing. But, you know, I mean, if it's a disaster under Trump, you're going to have, the Democrats will probably be back in 4 years. I just don't know what's going to happen. You just don't have any idea what's going to happen. But I will leave you with this. I'm speaking of movies like we were before just a bit. I wonder if Donald Trump's one of his favorite movies is not Brazil by Terry Gilliam. You know that movie?
Oh, I know that movie.
Okay, well, I sent you something. I found something on the in the Brazil DVD, on the extras, where the Ministry of Information had printed a bunch of I guess you could call them civil alert posters that they would have. You know, the whole thing is this Orwellian dystopian world. And these could come in handy for everybody, your listeners and everyone. I'm going to read them to you real quick. This won't take long. You're going to like this. And we could, these were up all over the city. The first one is truth is information. Suspicion breeds confidence. I like that one. Be safe. Be suspicious. Liberty, equality, fraternity, information. Eternal vigilance is the price of prosperity. Regret nothing, report everything. Loose talk is noose talk. Be a live patriot, not a dead traitor.
Ooh.
Be alert. Some terrorists look normal. I love this movie. Is there a suspect in your family? Contact the Ministry of Information. Trust in haste, regret at leisure. Trust at leisure, regret in haste. Don't suspect a friend, report him. Beware before, beware after. And finally, trust in security. Brought to you by the Ministry of Information.
I think it may be time to buy that film.
Oh, and you get all these great extras. You get it, it's one of those films that's worth watching while you hear the director do the commentary.
Because the director is Terry Jones.
Terry Gilliam.
Terry Gilliam, I'm sorry. I'm betting a million tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he's so good. And I mean, this guy did The Fisher King, okay? If you've ever seen that.
Oh, I have, I have.
That's a wonderful movie. Although my girlfriend does not like the Jeff Bridges character one bit in that movie. But.
Well, he's not exactly likable. And the thing is, working in this medium, it's real easy to watch The Fisher King and say, I could see how that would happen.
Yeah, well, I could, but she thought he was a scumbag.
Well, he kind of is. Or at least
he is. And she didn't like the way that she took him back. She said, at the end of the movie, she slaps him but takes him back. Oh, he's just a big lug. She doesn't like stuff like that. She thinks that's she would never take him back.
Well, she probably also hates the end of Pretty Woman too.
Maybe. I don't even remember that movie.
Well, Richard Gere.
I know he was starring in it, but I don't.
The thing is, it originally had a much different ending, and they test screened it to test audiences. It was a realistic ending, and they had to go back and reshoot the ending to give it a happy ending, and it shot to the top of the charts.
Oh boy! Well, some people will let that happen. Terry Gilliam is not one of those directors who will let that happen.
No,
and there was a huge to do over Brazil after it was completed. And in fact, the studio, I just didn't have a book about Terry Gilliam, I just had to notice, the studio, I don't know who it was, Universal or whatever, they would not release that movie in the United States because they wanted him to change that ending. If you recall, the ending is the hero of the movie in the torture chair being tortured by Michael Palin, and he passes out, and there's somebody else standing there with him, and the guy says, "Oh, I'm afraid we've lost him. Oh, darn, you know." And he's just got this goofy smile on his face. He's just in never land, and you get the idea that the whole movie, or a lot of the movie, have just been these torture hallucinations going on in his head. No, they didn't want that. They wanted the ending where the part where he imagines Robert De Niro and the rest of those covert heating and HVAC repairmen, you know, rappelling down into the torture room, saving him, and he gets away with the girl and gets out of the city and all that. They wanted that ending. And in fact, they actually put together that ending themselves. Gilliam did not help them with that one bit. And you can see that movie's on the extras, part of the extras of the DVD, which I do recommend you buying. It's awful. It just totally changes the whole movie into some goofball. Sometimes you don't want people walking out of the movie thinking everything's all right. You know?
Sometimes, a lot of the times, that's not art's job.
Oh, no.
C.E.G. Harold Pinter. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Reverbo, I really appreciate you calling in this evening. I love our conversations. You know that. I wish I had answers. But regardless of the lack of answers, I think conversations like this are helpful because it gives us some sense of, community. Even if there are no easy answers, there is, as long as we keep trying to find them, we know that we have not settled into that comfortably numb existence of the Trumpanzee. That's all I got.
It's going to be a hell. It's going to be a sure of a hell of a time crawling out of this hole. I'll tell you. I just got my Medicare card. This is a real landmark in my life. I don't know if we're going to crawl out of this hole while I'm still breathing.
By the same token,
and good thing I got that card too when I did.
Well, by the same token, that it's really frustrating when you're watching your team and they've got a 1-point margin of victory and the clock is ticking away, and then they lose on the final play because the field goal or the center snaps the ball through the end zone for a safety on a punt or something like that.
Mm.
That hurts worse than getting beaten 57-0. Because when it gets to 28-0, you kind of know that it's not going to be okay, and you start stealing yourself to it. But if you sat there and you've got that 1-point lead and it all goes away in the last instant, you're crushed. And so to that extent, yeah. I compare my position at 53, knowing that there is a plot afoot to take my Medicare away, and that they're completely out in the open about it, versus yours, where you've got it?
I just got it.
You just got it?
I just got it.
And the center just
wire.
Snapped the ball through the end zone with time with the last second ticking off the clock.
Well, we'll see if they actually want to get they're going to privatize and roll back Social Security and Medicare. This would be quite a feat. We'll see if they can do this. And maybe you're right. I think I heard you discuss this at one point. It's on some show where the plan would be to obviously grandfather and everybody that already had it, and it's all the new folks who are going to get the shaft. And
well, that's what they've said is their plan.
Yeah, and maybe they can do that. I don't know. But all I know is that I trust in security, and I think you should too.
Well, Reverbo, I tell you what, all we can do is wait and see. But, as has been observed, if for progressives, liberals, Democrats, even the middle of the roaders, even the conservatives, if there's a hill worth dying on, Medicare and Social Security are it. I think Charlie Pierce said that the other day. Probably more so than any other single issue.
It's forward into the past for these folks. You got to make a stand on this. So anyway, all right. Well, perhaps we will talk before the first of the year. We'll see. But if we don't, have a good holiday.
As we say here in Trump America, Reverbo, Heil Christmas.
And Heil Christmas to you and all your listeners and your family too, from me.
All right. Well, thank you, Reverbo, and to you the same, and much good feeling and goodwill and hopes for happiness, such as all it right. may be.
Until that time, my friend.
All right. And make sure you've weatherized the Silver Pelican, please.
I'm going to be finishing that up tonight.
I had a feeling. Take care, Reverbo.
All right.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Longtime friend of the program, that's Reverbo, the human boy. And, I love conversations like that. Couple of notes rolling along. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. And he's asking for some introspection and response on your part. Putster's appointment has convinced me beyond any reasonable doubt that Steve Bannon is the man in charge. The goddess of irony is more subtle than this. This has to be an intentional act of trolling. However, until I see contrary evidence, I remain unconvinced that Trump knows any Idiocracy references. I do not believe he would be capable of sitting through the film. He's humorless. Look at his face when Obama roasted him a few years ago. He might initially laugh at a few Idiocracy tropes and jokes, but within 10 to 15 minutes he'd get the feeling in his gut that the film was mocking people like him. This would piss him off, and he'd turn it off, as he always says about SNL.
unwatchable.
And it's my Trump. I don't know if it's going to get any better in the next 4 years. All I know to do is, you know, try to make my lips like a little anus, dude. You want to try, Ferg? The word is unwatchable.
Well, real quick as a tutorial.
Okay.
First, folks, you have to go into the voice of Droopy. You have to do Droopy. And then you got to be a little depressed with life. And then you make your mouth into a butthole. And then you sit there and you say, hey, it's unwatchable. I can't stand it.
Okay, that's scary. But thanks, Ferg. So, Michael continues, Bannon, however, is likely very familiar with Idiocracy. Yeah, because he's Hollywood, right? This smells like Bannon using a cabinet position to troll haters, i.e. all us liberals. I mean, my goddess, there are other hamburger corporations besides Carl's fucking Jr. Hey, yeah, sure. I mean, the guy at In-N-Out Burger, I mean, they're all Jesus-y, right? Michael says, when I saw the story about Putzer as labor secretary, I immediately thought, fake news. But of course, it's real. That confusion is by design. Thoughts? Am I through the looking glass? With your basic thesis, Michael, I don't think so. I mean, come on. If anybody's making decisions, the two people making decisions are Ivanka, her husband, Jared Kushner, who is the secretary of Vendettas. I declare Con Lee. There's our Dune reference for the evening. And, you know, racist Bannon. And racist Bannon of the three is the one who has a sort of, well, there weren't, I don't know. Is there anything in history to suggest that there were ever funny Nazis? Because he's got a sort of wicked, dark, very dark humor about him. So I don't think Michael, I don't think you're through the looking glass, and I think it's worth considering. In regard to something I said with Reverbo, Isaac tweeted, Sanders announced he'd seek the nomination for president on April 30th, 2015. On April 12th, 2015, Clinton announced her candidacy. I guess this is supposed to counter my statement that Bernie got in too late. But it doesn't. Because by, what was it, April 12th, 2015, Hillary Clinton had a 50-state machine that had the entire backing of the Democratic organization going all the way back to 2008. The only way Bernie could have countered that would have been to have been in hardcore campaign mode, way back in, 2011, 2012. But I don't even know that Progressive Democrats of America had even put forward their petition begging Bernie to run. Right? Meanwhile, over in the far frozen north, getting whiter by the moment, Ron points out, we continue to treat our Aboriginal citizens terribly. When I was in Canada's Foreign Affairs Department, I was asked to leave a joint meeting and as an aside, Ron points out Bannon equals Talleyrand Machiavelli. But he said, when I was in Canada's Foreign Affairs Department, I was asked to leave a joint meeting with our International Aid Department because I dared to ask, why are we debating the fine policy points of aid contributions to Central and West Africa of hundreds of millions of dollars when we have a 500,000 native Canadian citizens who have no running water or have been living under boiled water advisories for more than a decade and who have a life expectancy of only 2/3 of Canadians who live in the lower third of the country. Canadian citizens who had their families ripped apart in the name of Christian assimilation with the young kids hauled away, often hundreds of miles, to be whipped or beaten because they dared to speak their native tongue and who were often buried without a name in a small untended graveyard as if they were nothing more than a statistic. The housing you're talking about building and water treatment facilities you're willing to fund in Burkina Faso, Nigeria, and Botswana are just a dream to the people
who live on reserves across Canada. My God, you would have thought I said the Queen was queer. I was severely chastised because I left the meeting shaking my head with a smile on my face. Indeed, indeed. And a little while ago when we were talking about the New York Times interview at Fresh Air, Carol pointed out, the New York Times is now embracing 1930s brand white nationalism, some fucking fourth estate. And, you know, just watch, I'd say that's one of those jobs that we have. That's one of those jobs that we have is to watch these ongoing attempts at normalization. And there's going to be a ton of them. I've got a piece of got a piece of audio here. It goes back a few days. It's just a minute long. This is an exchange between Senator Elizabeth Warren and Anderson normalizing Cooper. They were talking about racist Bannon. You're not going to be happy with Anderson Cooper over this. At least I suspect you're not. Wait, it helps a lot if I unmute the channel before I start the audio. Let's try this again.
Racism and bigotry, he's got as his strategic advisor, a person who's a white supremacist, and he's
There's no evidence he's a white supremacist. I mean, he obviously, there's, you know, people from who are white supremacists who support Donald Trump and who support, like, Breitbart or Steve Bannon, but...
Come on.
Well, I mean...
Are we really... I mean, Steve Bannon has certainly associated himself with white supremacists. Will you go that far?
I mean,
there's no evidence that he's a white supremacist. I mean, you know, except for all the articles that he approved for publication at Breitbart. Except for all the words that have come out of his mouth.
I don't know that you can say, though, he's a white supremacist.
Well, he has associated himself with white supremacists. Is that close enough? I mean, this is a guy whose appointment is applauded by the KKK. I mean, what Donald Trump is doing is he's putting, so far, he has said that he's going to go forward on bigotry and that he's going to go forward on Wall Street insiders. And I think this is a real problem for the American people. I don't think this is where the American people want to go.
So you got that? Anderson Cooper won't even let a guy who self-identifies as white nationalist be referred to as what a white nationalist really is, a white supremacist. Yeah. Kind of off-putting, isn't it? I guess he'd probably... have a normalizing hissy if, you know, she referred to it as alt-white. And then, of course, there's Michael Flynn Jr., son of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, with the tweeting about the Pizzagate stuff. But here's the thing. He's also... Flynn Jr. On his Twitter bio, it links to a GAB page. And GAB is a, as it was described by the New York Times, oddly enough,
Gab has emerged as a digital safe space for the far right, where white nationalists, conspiracy theorists, YouTubers, and minivan majority moms can gather without liberal interference. Milo Yiannopoulos, Richard B. Spencer, Ricky Vaughn, they're all on Gab with Michael Flynn Jr. The same day he sent out the Pizzagate tweet, he went on Gab to praise a collage. A collage that showed Barack Obama kissing two fingers while wearing a tux behind a podium. And the collage featured African-American criminals and Muslim terrorists. Yeah. Flynn Sr., however, has also tweeted, "Fear of Muslims is rational. Please forward this to others. The truth fears no questions. Fear of Muslims is rational." Meanwhile, Asa sent me a picture from a mosque near him, which has a big blinking light in front of it. The big blinking light on the mosque, the lighted sign, says, "Love for all, hatred for none." At a mosque! But, of course, Michael Flynn Sr. says, "Fear of Muslims is rational." Yeah. 26 minutes past the hour, and we still have $189 to go in fundraising for the evening. I guess we're going to wind up with a big fundraising hole to fill in on Friday on the front porch. Kind of hate that. It's easier when it's just $200. But it's $189 to go to finish out the evening. And it sure would be nice to knock that down. Sorry, Robert in Australia. Racist Bannon. That's Johnny Quest, ruined forever. Oh, you don't want to live in my brain. You just don't. Hey, Scott, how are you and Punky?
Well, we are having, how shall I describe it? We are having a hot diggity ding-dong damn day here in San Diego because I'm doing one of my least favorite things in the world, and that's waiting for a package to be delivered.
Oh, the anticipation.
Ay.
Is it going to be a fun package or a scary package?
It's going to be a fun package, for me anyway. Recently, California, and then more recently, the city of San Diego, decided to institute a plastic bag ban at the grocery stores, and you can still get them if you pay a dime a piece for the goddamn plastic bags at the checkout counter. And I use a couple of reusable totes to carry stuff because I travel by bus or walking primarily. But it doesn't make sense to me because I don't just throw these into the wind and let them choke seagulls. I reuse these bags, like when I'm cleaning the cat's litter box and just various and sundry.
Save them here, too, and they do come in handy. It's cheaper than buying mass-produced bags.
Well, I spent something like $12 for 500 of these grocery bags from Amazon, I think it was, and that's the package that I'm waiting for. So, anyway, I didn't call about my bag problem.
It's my bag, baby.
One of the things that Ron in the Frozen North mentioned jiggered something inside of my aged cranium. And what it was a memory, a faint memory of a video that I saw on YouTube. And if the fun lovers and truth seekers will grab their crayons and their big boy tablets, I'll give him a moment, and then I'll give him the title. But it was Saul Alinsky from 1967 talking to a Canadian Native American, not Native American, but a indigenous Canadian activist back in 1967 about how to get organized. And it's about a half-hour video, and I recommend it. And if everybody has their crayon poised over their big boy tablet, I'll give you the title on YouTube.
Go, man.
Okay, it's Saul Alinsky, Brilliant Epic Conversation on Revolution. And it's quite good. It's worth the half hour it takes to watch it. So check that out. Saul Alinsky, Brilliant Epic Conversation on Revolution. And something that Ron said jarred my mind a bit and made me think of that video, and people should check that out. And it's applicable to the rest of us, too, especially in the wake of the recent election results. But I want to lighten it up just slightly. Earlier, you were talking about Linda McMahon and her husband, Vince McMahon, the former wrestling
magnate. Not Ed, not James, not Epaminondas, no.
No, but his daddy was Vince McMahon Sr. And back in the 40s, I guess, he started an organization called Capital Wrestling Corporation, all in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic states, where he would organize wrestling matches, professional wrestling matches. Well, let me tell you very quickly my wrestling story. So take my hand, and I'll grab the hand of Mr. Peabody and his boy Sherman, and we'll jump into the Wayback Machine and set the dials for early 1960s. I'm thinking 62 or maybe 3. In my hometown, just outside of D.C., every summer, professional wrestling would come to town, and they'd set up a ring on the 50-yard line of the George Washington High School football stadium and set up seats around the ring. Those were the ringside seats. And then the cheap seats were up in the bleachers, which is where myself and my great-great-aunt, Emma, would go to watch the wrestling, because she loved wrestling, okay? Well, it was about a two-hour card that night, and among the attractions, they had the lady wrestlers, and they had the height challenged wrestlers, and they also had female height challenged wrestlers, okay? Well, to me, the biggest event of the night was when Haystacks Calhoun of the state of Texas, he tipped the scales at 612 pounds. He wore big old countrified overalls with a big old chain around his big old neck with a big old horseshoe attached to the end of the chain. And he had long, scraggly hair and a big old scraggly beard. They put Haystacks Calhoun up against at least two or three conventionally sized wrestlers. And somewhere in the proceedings, they managed to lift Haystacks up a little bit and try to body slam him onto the mat in the ring. Now, this is how I knew from that moment on that wrestling, at least in that instance, is not fixed. Okay? It's not heavily rehearsed. It's not prearranged, at least that night for that thing. They managed to pick him up about 2 or 3 feet off of the mat and drop him, the best they could do of a body slam, whereupon Haystacks proceeds to crash through the ring, creating a gigantic, it's like a cartoon, like a gigantic Haystacks Calhoun-shaped hole in the center of the ring. Well, immediately they had to call a halt to the proceedings because they had to fix the ring for the night's event to continue. The ring announcer was an old gentleman. I guess he was in his 80s by then. He used to wear a carnation in his lapel. His name was Jimmy Lake. They used to call him Carnation Jimmy Lake. And he was the master of ceremonies at the Gaiety Burlesque House in D.C. on 9th Street, around the corner from where the FBI building is now. And old Jimmy was making the announcement that there would be a short delay, and somehow poor Jimmy fell into the hole in the ring, presumably down there with haystacks somewhere. But when you were talking about wrestling and the McMahons, I thought back to those innocent times in the early 60s when the worst we had to worry about were things like, oh, I don't know, the Cuban Missile Crisis and presidents getting shot down in the streets.
Jesus, what a time to be alive.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. People.
See, I grew up with it. I grew up with a different wrestling dynamic. I had wrestling on what started out as WTCG, then became WTBS, and then became the Superstation.
Yeah. Ted Turner's operation out of Atlanta.
And it featured a classic wrestling announcer by the name of Gordon Soley. How about that? I couldn't remember that John Glenn was a Democrat, but I've got I got brain cell space for Gordon Soley.
I remember him.
And he was, but every region had wrestling, didn't it?
Yeah, there were several federations. There was a big Midwestern one and a big one out here on the West Coast. But Vince McMahon Sr.'s operation in the mid-Atlantic states onward up into New England was one of the biggest and well-organized. As a matter of fact, according to Wikipedia, he was the first wrestling promoter to split the gate proceeds with his wrestlers as opposed to giving them a straight salary, because wrestling was hot back in the 50s and 60s. I don't know how it is now, because after the 60s, I kind of grew out of it. But it used to be, as a matter of fact, the independent station in D.C., Channel 5, Metro Media, which is now owned by Fox, back in those days would run wrestling a couple of nights a week from either Bridgeport, Connecticut, or the Washington Coliseum, where the Beatles later performed. And they would televise it. And my Aunt Emma's sister, Aunt Effie, who was a couple of years older.
We've talked about Aunt Effie, yes.
She was totally different from Emma. She was a few years older. She was very Victorian in her bearing. And you wouldn't expect her to be a wrestling fan. But every Wednesday night or whenever they would run the wrestling, she would sit there. She'd make up a plate of egg salad sandwiches and get her can of Ham's beer and sit there. And she wanted the volume turned down because she didn't like to hear him screaming in pain. And she would get on the edge of her chair. The beer would be sloshing all over the place. And she'd kill him. Kill him. Scratch his eyes out. You know, this old 90-some-year-old woman.
Oh, no. I think everybody. I don't know if Edward's listening in Dallas, but I bet he had an aging auntie or two that lived for wrestling. My born in 1894 grandmother swore it was real.
Oh yes.
So
but they had some very colorful characters back then. They had Bruno Sammartino was the world heavyweight champion at the time. And they had, the villains were rather colorful. Killer Kowalski was one of them. And there was one guy that wore a mask who was a real evil son of a bitch. And they had I forget their name. I think they were the Graham brothers. They were twins and they were both wrestlers. They were featured in the tag team matches a lot. But they actually, I know we're not supposed to use the word midget, but there were actually midget wrestlers, both men and women, who made an amazing living. I mean, you think back to the money, even back in the 60s that these folks were making. I mean, you could get yourself badly injured, but if you could survive it, you'd make a shitload of money.
And to be fair, as Larry points out to me in a message, you can't just say Gordon Solie without saying Georgia Championship Wrestling, which then became World Championship Wrestling, WCW.
Now, was that the group that Turner later bought into or had a big deal with?
Well, I mean, if it was running on TBS, he had to have an interest.
Yeah.
Simple, he wasn't. Isn't.
Well, that's true. Well, he's a multimillionaire. Somewhere there is, it may have been on Netflix or I may have seen it on YouTube, but in the late 90s, there was a really nice documentary that was narrated by Steve Allen about the world of wrestling. And if you can find it, have a look at it, because it really goes into the, you know, the golden days back in the 50s and 60s, because wrestling was something that helped TV catch on in a big way, because as always, they were hungry for content.
Well, sure. And even the crummy little TV station just a few miles away from here, a guy who is in his 90s who ran and lost a race for House of Delegates this past November here, he sat in the House for eons, and his claim to fame was he announced wrestling over to the TV station every Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
By the way, I have a note from Ron in the far frozen north. Please advise Scott that I can remember standing on the playground at my elementary school and watching B-52s flying down to Florida during the Cuban Missile Crisis at an altitude of about 1,000 feet. Scared the bejesus out of me. Right after that, some asshole in school administration decided to hold a duck and cover drill. P.S. Who remembers Gorgeous George?
Oh yes, I was a little, he was out of the business or dead by the time I really got to watching wrestling in the late 50s and into the early 60s. But yeah, he was one of the stars, one of the big attractions. And oh, that's funny that Ron should mention those B-52s. I grew up in the D.C. area, just south of the nation's capital. And I had an afternoon paper route in those days, the old Washington Daily News. And I remember the missile crisis in the sense that the headlines were very big and the grown-ups during that week or so were all speaking in very, very hushed tones. And after it was all over and we found out just how close we came, I remember looking in the World Book Encyclopedia that had an overhead, an aerial view, maybe even a satellite view, of Washington, D.C. and suburbs. And they had a photograph with concentric rings depicting if ground zero for a nuclear attack was the Washington Monument. They had concentric rings going out from there explaining this distance, what would happen, and then a little further out, what would happen, and a little further out, what would happen. Well, hell, we were 4 miles south of D.C., so we were in the second ring, to be sure. And it wasn't wrestling that was going on. It was being charbroiled in your skin, okay? And I'm glad that I really wasn't aware of the gravity of how close we came in October of 62. I'm glad that I didn't see that graphic until a few years later.
Well, I'm informed by Carol Baker. She said, we used to play all-star wrestling as kids. I always had to be Haystack Calhoun. My brother John still calls me Haystack. No kidding.
Does she have the horseshoe?
Oh, no, she sent me the picture of Haystack Calhoun.
Oh, yes.
I'm guessing he did not live a long, long old age life.
No, as a matter of fact, he died on December 7th of 85, strangely enough. He was
all right, 54. All right, okay, we got wrestling trivia for you.
Okay.
Ron and Raleigh wants to know, can Scott name at least two of the three wrestlers that used the moniker The Nature Boy?
One of them was Arnold, was it Scullin or Scallon? He's the one, he's one of them that I actually saw at the local wrestling event as a child. Nature Boy, was Buddy Rogers also a Nature Boy?
Yes.
And the third one escapes me. I have no idea.
Ric Flair.
Ah, yes. Okay, well, he was later after I stopped following wrestling. But was I right? I know I was right.
You're right on Buddy Rogers. I don't know about the Arnold guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was his name. No, wait a minute. He was Golden Boy. I'm sorry, I stand corrected. Or was he Nature Boy? Now I'm going to worry about that for a while. Nature Boy, well, hell, I'll Google it. Google is your friend.
Well, I'm looking, that's what I'm doing right now, and I'm not getting a result on number three. Yeah, Buddy Rogers. I'm trying to see if there's a disambiguation.
Yeah, Buddy Rogers, Ric Flair, and Buddy Landell, according to Wikipedia.
And, of course, we admit that by having resorted to the Internet, we cheated.
Well, yes, we did, but...
Buddy, sorry. Yep, Ron and Riley, Buddy Landell.
Yeah, I'm guessing that he was...
Yeah, but do you know who played the Cisco Kid?
What, on TV?
I'm just being a smartass.
Or was there a Cisco Kid wrestler? They all had very colorful names.
Well, way back... See, it doesn't really make it into the movie, and one of the movies I despise the absolute most, Scott, is the film version of Forrest Gump. Everybody thought that was so wonderful. And to anybody who read the book, it was like, wow, this is a real turd. Because one of the many adventures of Forrest Gump that takes place in the actual book version is he spends some time as a professional wrestler, in which he is the dunce. And Forrest Gump's shtick is to go into the ring wearing a dunce cap and a diaper.
Oh God, I've got to read the book. I rather liked the movie, but I had not read.
I don't know. Maybe the book won't resonate with you having seen the movie, but if you read the book first, the movie makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, yeah. Dear God, there's a scene with the cannibal chief of a Polynesian cargo cult. And Forrest Gump has to play chess for his very life.
I think I will order that book as soon as I hang up, because my kind of book.
For me, it was the night before I was supposed to take the LSAT, the law school entrance exam. And I was kind of doing it, I guess, on a lark, because I worked for a living back then. And I really didn't have a whole lot of time to put into studying for it. You know, I kind of went over the booklet, and there was no internet back then. So I tried to familiarize myself with it, but I really had no idea. I just knew that there wasn't going to be a lot of fucking math on it, so maybe I'd have some hope. And so I was sort of spazzing the night before, and there was this place in Atlanta that we called the Disco Krogers, because it was... It was over off of Piedmont, and it was next to, it was one of the few places in Atlanta you could go where they would have, you know, it was a dance place, but they would have bands, you know, with full horn sections and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And the Limelight, I think, was the name of it. But everybody referred to the Krogers there as the Disco Krogers. And it was the first Kroger I'd also ever seen that had a sit-down sushi bar with a real sushi chef behind the counter. I mean, this is Buckhead, okay? And I was just kind of couldn't sleep, couldn't focus. And so
I was over at the Disco Kroger's for some reason, and I just walked through the magazine and book aisle. It was a different world. And this goofy paperback book cover of a not particularly thick paperback book sort of jumped off the shelf at me, and it just said Forrest Gump. And so I picked it up. I opened the front cover, leaned over onto the magazine rack, and began to read and began to laugh, and the tears began rolling down my face, and I began to gasp, and I realized that I might as well buy it and go home and do that in the privacy of my own apartment as opposed to standing there in the magazine and book section of Kroger's and get arrested.
Or stressing out over the how well you'll do.
Well, I didn't. That was the end of me stressing out. I went home. I read the book. I was done with it in about 2.5 hours and went to bed, slept the sleep of the just, got up the next morning, drove into town, parked at a MARTA station, got on the train, rode down to Georgia State, went in, sat down, took the test, blew it away. I didn't know it at the time because back then you had to wait 46 weeks for delivery. And went on about the business of going to work every day. And figured, well, you know, if I passed, I passed. If I didn't, I didn't. And I forget what my score was, but it was sufficient enough to get me into a bunch of law schools. And I credit Forrest Gump by Winston Groom for that fact.
Well, that dynamic sounds very similar to something that, I don't know if you ever watched the drama Mad Men.
Yes.
But the protagonist in that was Donald Draper, who was the creative director of Sterling Cooper Advertising, and his protege was Peggy, okay? And she went from being a secretary to a junior copywriter to being like an accounts type, not an accounts type person, but right there on the creative staff, moving up bit by bit.
Right, right.
And she was stumped by some situation that she had an assignment for. And Draper said, what you do is you think about it intensely, and then you drop it completely out of your mind. And the solution will come to you at some point not too long afterwards. So Forrest Gump served that purpose, it sounds like, with your exam.
It obviously did. Because you can only go so far with worry, and I just gave up and you know grabbed myself a spicy tuna roll, got my book, and went home.
All right.
Well, you've stirred up a lot of memories with all this wrestling talk. Kitty in Boston says I used to stay up late as a little kid and watch wrestling on Saturday nights. What a blast. Used to love Classy Freddie Blassie and Chief J. Strongbow and George the Animal Steele. Good times.
Oh, wow.
And as by way of a follow-up, Carol points out that Haystack Calhoun weighed 663 pounds at death, and he died in 1989, not at 1985. And he amazingly lived to be all of 55 years old.
Yeah, well, I confused the year, but yeah, he was 55. Well, see, when he was in his prime, he was at 612 pounds. He let himself go there toward the end.
Jesus. Well, I mean, I guess that's if that's what you get, that's how you get through. I mean, you do what can get you through life. I mean, it's kind of like. Played in The Princess Bride, Andre the Giant.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And was said to be a delight of a human being.
Well, the wrestling fans will like this. It's another documentary, and it's either on Netflix or Amazon, or maybe I saw it on YouTube. But I forget the title, but one of the stars is probably the most prominent female wrestler of the golden age, the 50s and 60s, maybe even the 70s, Fabulous Moolah. And if you Google Fabulous Moolah documentary, you'll probably get the title. And like I say, it's either on Amazon, Netflix, or YouTube, or it could be on all three. That does happen. But it was quite good. They led a very, very, very arduous, difficult life.
Oh, it's hard business. By the way, you just got a courtesy of Carol Baker. He let himself go there at the end. I don't care who you are. Carol says that was funny. Meanwhile, with the with the international perspective, the things that get this community fired up, I'll never understand. Robert in Australia says wrestling in Oz. All these wrestler names, they or their characters were all out here in Australia in the mid to late 60s on RV Saturday and Sunday at midday, followed by a Tarzan or a Godzilla film. And you can't say Godzilla film without me thinking of Gomer Pyle. Like, hey, Luann, you want to go see a Godzilla movie? Surprise, surprise, surprise. Right.
Somehow TV seemed better when we had limited channels to choose from.
Okay, so get this. I said I had to go to Charleston earlier today. It was because we had to, Ferg screwed up his hand, had surgery, and then managed to fall down. And because his hand was screwed up, he didn't use his hand to stop his fall, so he wrecked his shoulder.
Oh, Jesus.
And so we had a consult with an orthopod today to find out if that was going to need to be surgically fixed. The good news is, no. He's just going to have a hump for the rest of his days. I mean, not a hump. We can do something about that hump. What hump? It's just that kind of this little tiny bone on your shoulder that is held down by a ligament ain't anymore, and it kind of spring and is sprung up, and there's this pointy little bony, and it hurts. But it doesn't require surgery. So we're on our way out, and he's checking out, and we're waiting on the physical therapy referral sheet to come out. And there's this network called, like, MyTV. And all they run are ancient TV programs. I mean, when we first went in, Gunsmoke was going off, and Bonanza was coming on. But when we were coming out, The Rifleman was on.
Ooh.
And Chuck Connors went to the door, and he opened the door, and there was Sheriff Micah beat all to hell. Now, this came on at like 4:30 in the afternoon, every afternoon of my young life when I was growing up. But I didn't remember this one. And I was, and again, that's kind of the power of TV, too. I just, because I'm a cord cutter here, right?
Yeah.
I just, bzz, and laser beam focused, eyes opened up, glazed over a little bit. And I was taking in The Rifleman like it was high damn drama, which it was, because he stopped an old man, and he said, I need to know how, and I'm looking for a man named, and it was a weird Eastern European name. And he said, I ain't telling you nothing, because I don't bother them, and they don't bother me. But you take the trail up to the top of the mountain till there ain't no trail no more. But, mister, you don't want to take that trail. It's a one-way trail to sorrow. And you're not going to find any friends up there. And Chuck Connors looks back at him and says, I'm not looking for a friend. I mean, this was before Clint Eastwood was, I mean, this is, I mean, that was this back when Clint Eastwood was a tenderfoot wet behind the ears on Rawhide. Chuck Connors, I'm not looking for a friend.
Oh, hell no. Lucas McCain was his character's name.
Yes.
And he was a tough customer. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, damn straight. And so he walks into the bar there with of the mining town with his lever action rifle in his hand, and apparently it's a bar full of people wearing Eastern European toboggans. There must have been a run on Eastern European toboggans down at the store and the costuming department. Well, shit, we got to buy a couple of crates of those. But Ferg was like, we can go, Dad. I'm like, no, we can't. I got to see what happened to Micah. I'm pathetic.
No, you just appreciate quality Western drama of a certain vintage. It transports you magically back to a time when stuff was less insane, I think.
Yeah, and it wasn't the best acting in the world, but it wasn't the worst. And Chuck Connors is a pretty interesting story, as Ron and Raleigh points out. He played both pro baseball for the Dodgers, and he played pro basketball, I think, for the Celtics. And he was the first basketball player to break a glass backboard.
Oh, wow.
And
I knew about the baseball, but I'd forgotten about the basketball.
And by the way, it's not my TV, it's me TV. It's me TV, so for anybody who's looking for it. And by the way, we got a note from Steve in New York. He says, thank you. I don't know about anyone else, but this non-political program is just what the doctor ordered. Major kudos to you and Scott. Well, you know, for Stiff and Punky, Steve. it's like that joke, you know. The canary can't sing a goddamn lick. The mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. But we got to get out of here. Scott, have yourself a good evening. I hope your package arrives in time and undamaged.
Well, thank you, and I'll send you a complimentary bag.
Well, do, please. You know, here we still get them for free over to the grocery store because we're not commies like you are.
Well, any state that has coal, you know.
We understand that the planet lives to be shit on.
Yes, well, not only that, but the Earth will survive a plastic bag or two when you've got a major coal operation going on.
Well, there's that. Scott, have a good night, my friend. Take care.
Okay, see you.
Bye now. And it is time to get out of here. We will wrong fader there, Bob. We will close the evening. $189 in fundraising to go. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for helping keep all this going. Remember, there's a premium out there. Every new subscriber between now and the 15th gets their first month's contribution doubled. And frankly, that's all courtesy of Joan in Taliban, Indiana. And so far, she doesn't have that much work to do. I'm sure she would like to have more. So just bear that in mind. Got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.